Hi everyone, and welcome back to the University of Laws podcast. I'm your host, Rick Palmer. Today's episode is another from the Human Rights mini-series, and we're going to talk about LGBTQ plus rights and how their human rights are violated, and about hate crimes for people based solely on their sexuality or their right to identify as a different gender to that they were assigned at birth. So listen to this, understand a little bit more about human rights and about how you maybe can fit it into your future career. And understand that it should affect everyone. This isn't just for people within the LGBTQ plus community. It should be something that we all believe in and are passionate about, and we all should support, help to orchestrate change. So take a listen. It's with a great criminology tutor that we have here at the University of Law, and we hope you enjoy it.
Hi everyone. My name is Luke Hubbard. I'm a lecturer in criminology at the University of Law. In terms of my education, I guess I wasn't really going to go into education to start with. So I went to secondary school, I went to college and did A-levels. And then I thought, at the end of my A-levels, I thought I'd probably just go and get a job. And then one of my tutors asked me what I was doing. And I said my plan was to carry on working at Waitrose, which is where I was working at the time, part-time. I said, it's just easier to get a full-time job, I think, and start earning some money. And then she said, oh, well, I think you should go to university and all that. And I thought, yeah, but I don't think there's anything I really want to study there. And at the time when I was at college, I was studying law, psychology and history. And my law tutor asked if I'd heard about the topic of criminology, which I hadn't. And she told me about it. So I went away and did some research. And I thought, well, this sounds really interestingly, and learning about the criminal justice system, why people commit crime, you know, how we can prevent crime, all that type of thing. I thought, actually, no, that sounds like it'd be quite good to learn for 3 years. So I went off to Leicester University where I did that. And as I started learning about it, as I progressed through my undergraduate course, I just really sort of fell in love with it and became, I guess, really fixated with the idea about trying to understand more about trying to understand particularly why people are victimised and how we can sort of reduce that victimisation and how we can stop it happening in the first place. After I completed my undergrad, I went on to do a master's in social research and criminology. Because I thought the best way to go about sort of trying to further the cause of helping victims of crime, you know, to live crime-free or to live crime-free lives, would be to, you know, conduct my own research on the areas that I had an interest in. So I went and did my master's. I then worked as a research assistant for a couple of years at a crime institute at the University of Northampton before embarking on my PhD journey. In I think it was 2016 I started, where I'm looking at the topic of homophobic and transphobic hate crime. So, and I'm still finishing that off now at the moment. So I'm just in the writing up stage. So I'm doing that alongside teaching at the University of Law.
Well, that's very interesting. More interesting than my backstory. That's it leads really well on, because obviously the content of your PhD is what your community lecture in the event that we've got coming up. Could you give us a little bit more information about that and about any cases that you maybe have been quite prolific for you?
Yes, so my talk is going to be on the topic of homophobic and transphobic hate crime. So it's going to look at sort of the nature of hate crime. So it's going to look at the scale of hate crime at the moment, particularly with a focus on England and Wales. It's going to look at the nature of that hate, the nature of hate crime. So the type of offences that we tend to see in terms of homophobic and transphobic hate crime. And then it's going to look at the impact of that type of crime upon those targeted. So it's going to look at sort of the level of harm these people experiences and the type of harm these individuals experience as well. And then it's going to look on at sort of at the more broader point is with hate crime, while it's targeted at individuals. So when we talk about hate crime, I should probably just define what it is first. So hate crime is a criminal offence that is motivated by or which demonstrates hostility or prejudice towards somebody, the victim, because of factors such as their race, their sexual orientation, their religion, their disability, or their transgender identity. Now, I focus specifically upon looking at homophobic and transphobic hate crime. Now, what we know with hate crime as well is that it doesn't just impact upon the direct victims of the crime. Hate crime is what's known as a message crime. They are basically symbolic acts which are designed to send a message of hostility and intolerance to anyone who shares the identity or characteristic of the targeted victim. So what we know with hate crime is that while the direct victim is also targeted, it has a much wider impact upon the sort of the wider LGBT community as well. So I'm going to explore that broader impact of hate crime as well in my talk.
Well, that's really interesting. I've never really even thought about it, the like, the crime is intended to hurt more than just the individual that's being attacked at the time. Like, is there an incredible point to think about? Were there any shocks and surprises you found on your way whilst doing this research?
Yes, I guess I was, I mean, a number of things surprised me. One of the main things that surprised me is the sheer sort of scale of hate crime that we see at the moment of hate crime in England and Wales, particularly homophobic and transphobic hate crime. So over the last 5 years, the reports of homophobic hate crime have trebled. So there's much, much more homophobic hate crime going on. And in terms of transphobic hate crime, that's quadrupled. So we're seeing much, much more hate crime now. And when I tell people, you know, about the research that I've done about sort of the scale of hate crime, so this is how much hate crime is out there, it always takes people aback because, you know, I believe that we do live in quite a tolerant, open and free society. But the fact, you know, LGBT people, for example, are, you know, they can adopt children, they can, you know, legally marry. And if we compare, you know, how LGBT people live their lives today compared to, let's say, back in the 1960s and 70s when, you know, homosexuality was illegal or, you know, and it was only fully decriminalised in the early 2000s, then I would say, you know, that we've made much progress on that. But the fact that LGBT people feel perhaps unable to, you know, to live their life freely, to, you know, walk down the street, to dress how they want to hold hands with their same-sex partner because they're fearful of being abused, I think is quite shocking. And also quite shocking as well, I think, is that when I talk to victims of homophobic and transphobic hate crime, is the fact that for many of these victims, this occurs every day. It's not just sort of one event. This is a regular daily occurrence that they have to put up with. And that obviously takes a real toll on their life and their well-being. Because some people have to look at the nature of hate crime. They go, oh, well, the majority of the stuff that people experience is only verbal abuse. It's only name calling. They just need to, you know, get a bit tougher, you know, not take it so seriously. But yeah, the fact is for these people, as I say, this is a cumulative effect. It has, if you were getting, you know, shouted at and abused on a daily basis, that's going to slowly start to wear you down. And it's, and like I say, it has this really sort of, it takes a real strong toll on victims who feel perhaps unable to, in some cases, feel unable to leave the house because they're worried about what might happen to them. They feel they can only go out at certain places or at certain times. They change the way they look or they change the way they talk so that perhaps they will appear, you know, less gay or less, more like a man or a woman or more like their assigned gender, assigned at birth factors. And I think actually that's really sad, you know, and that's why we sort of need to know much more about this so we can hopefully try and reduce it if at all possible.
Yeah, I think it's obviously quite a sad thing that if you compare to a very aggressive physical abuse such as like in Russia where it's almost encouraged, people think, well, it's not as bad as over there. However, as you, simple things like the marginalization of, well, what people are able to do in any couple should be applicable to everyone. So, you know, holding hands in the street, like you say, or just representation in media, it just doesn't happen enough. And it doesn't really help someone who's obviously struggling with something that the world is not okay with at the moment, and it should be. Whole thing. Where do you think your passion from about studying and researching all this came from?
That's a good question. I guess one of my lecturers at Leicester University specialises in the topic of hate crime. And again, I hadn't heard much about this until I went to university. And when I was learning about it, because I took the module, I was quite surprised that, because when we think of hate crime, the majority of research and the majority of knowledge we have out there is all about sort of racial or religious hate crime. And being a gay man myself, I was quite surprised by the fact that actually we know very little about homophobic or transphobic hate crime. So I guess actually I really wanted to make a difference in terms of sort of bringing issues of sort of LGBT victimisation to the forefront. It's kind of been left behind. Like I say, it's either consumed under the broader banner of hate crime, which, you know, consumes a number of different groups, as I said, like race, religion, disability, you know, alternative subcultures and so on. So I wanted to focus specifically on homophobic and transphobic hate crime to bring that issue to the fore, because I feel it. People have done bits of work around it and research, but actually there was nothing, nobody really driving that field forward perhaps. And I thought actually there's a real clear gap here where I can make a difference. And my key aim of teaching criminology and researching criminology is all about trying to make a difference and improve the world, you know, whether that be in terms of reducing victimisation, but also perhaps trying to reduce offending as well, or the type of offending.
That's really interesting. Another podcast that we've done on in this series with Angela Charles, it's on Black women in the UK justice system. And she gave pretty much a very similar answer in that she said, it's really just got no research into it. So when she started to look into it, she couldn't find stats and figures because people weren't researching that topic. And similar to you, she's chosen a topic that she can actually think, right, well, I need to make the research happen. I need it to be there so people can hear and see more about it. So I think that's a really good point for everyone that's like tuning in and listening, is that the criminology is about spotting the change that needs to be made and kind of highlighting it, identifying it. And maybe you will be, if you are a criminologist, maybe you will be one of the first people to be publishing information on something that you're very passionate about. And that's so important, because it's going to get the narrative started and get the, you know, people actually have some evidence, something to speak about.
Yeah, completely.
Actually, we're seeing a lot more of a much bigger profile of Trans Lives Matter. And it was also heavily included within the Black Lives Matter campaign. Where are the biggest injustices happening for people? Because a lot of people out there will be very passionate and sympathetic to people of the trans community, but not really understand maybe what they're going through. What are the main things that need to change with regards to the hate crime?
That's a really good question, particularly in relation to the sort of transphobic hate crime. I think over the last couple of years, there's been a lot of debate, particularly around the Gender Recognition Act. And actually, I think there's been a lot of perhaps misinformation about what that act actually does and what the reforms that were proposed by the government actually does. So I think that's led to a lot of sort of conflict between, you know, people that are arguing that gender is what's assigned to at birth, that gender and sex should mirror. Actually, and people that go, actually, you know, sex is what you're biologically born with, but gender is more of it's sort of socially constructed. And I think that's where a lot of issues have come from. So I think actually a key thing we could be doing is sort of better educating people about, you know, what we're referring to when we're talking about things such as, you know, trans issues and trans rights, because I think there's a lot of misinformation out there about that type of thing. I think in terms of sort of the stuff that we could be doing, I think it's really important that we try and that we take these issues really seriously, particularly from a criminal justice point of view. So as I've said, that we know that rates of sort of homophobic, transphobic hate crime have increased significantly over the last few years. And it's really important that we take that seriously. So it sends a message to victims that, you know, that we take your victimization seriously. But it also sends a message to perpetrators, you know, that we don't take this sort of these incidents lightly, you know, and that wherever possible, they'll face sort of the full force of the law. Not that that's always the best way to go about it, but I think actually that has a really important deterrent effect on some people as well. So it's making sure that victims feel confident in coming forward to report their victimization. And that's not only important to ensure that we can try and hopefully bring the perpetrator to some form of justice to ensure that the offending stops, but also to ensure that that victim is able to get some kind of support. Because what we know about with hate crime particularly is that the effect of hate crime could be significant. As I've said, it can lead to sort of really dramatic behavioural changes, but it can also have psychological and impacts and sort of impacts on people's well-being as well. So it's really important that people are able to get the support that they require from support services. But what we know is that 80% of LGBTQ plus victims of hate crime don't report their victimisation. So many of these victims are putting up with this abuse on a sometimes almost daily basis, actually. And they've sort of got no recourse for action. And I think that's pretty problematic. So we could really change that. I also think we need better representation of LGBTQ plus people in terms of what we see on TV, what we see in newspapers and all that type of thing. So to make it more normalised, because what some people would argue is that a lot of hate crime stems from this idea of difference and an unfamiliarity with difference. And if you're not familiar with that, then sometimes you can lash out for whatever reason. So actually, I think better visibility of LGBT plus people, also just in our daily lives, say, you know, in terms of going about our day-to-day life, seeing more people out and about, you know, having sort of more teachers, more police officers that identify with these communities as well, you know, is going to have a real benefit as well. Because it won't seem as if it's so alien to lots of people. It will just hopefully be something that we see as normal.
Kind of make the perpetrator the minority and then hopefully get people, the world to change in the right direction. I think one of the interesting things about human rights with the LGBT community is also that a lot of it is actually human rights being violated by sets of laws. I know it's changed now, but when I was growing up, I remember being told in like the age of consent was different for same-sex people, which obviously has a huge connotation as to something very uncomfortable that I know about what the perception is of people say, in the same-sex relationship. But also in more modern times now, we still find that the people are fighting against basic human rights like adoption, getting married, healthcare in America has just changed. I think it's a bill trying to go through at the moment that reduces trans people's rights to just healthcare. And then, like you say, identifying, being allowed to identify as
a gender that you weren't assigned at birth is a challenge. It's you're allowed to see it on certain documents, but some of they're still trying to remove it from others. What kind of things are there in the law that we should be aware of that we probably need to maybe speak out about and say that we want changing as either a member of the community or an ally of the community?
That's a really good question. I think there are lots of things. So I think, as you rightly mentioned, there are, in terms of sort of the law, in terms of homosexuality, we have seen a significant change. So, you know, up until, I think it was partially decriminalised homosexuality in 1967, which and it was only fully decriminalised, I think, around the early 2000s. I think it was 2003. So we have made a lot of progress, particularly in England and Wales, with regards to homosexuality in the law. There are still a couple of pieces of legislation that potentially can lead to homophobia. One of the issues in terms of law and homophobia is this idea of having sex in public, so going to public sex environments. Now, that in itself isn't a criminal offence, but actually there is guidance that and police forces, they used to sort of police that quite heavily, but since then we've seen a change in the law, which has meant that rather than it being a, because the law used to be quite specific, where it used to refer to basically two males having sex in public. So that law has basically been changed now to refer to all sexes. But what we have seen in some areas of the UK over the last couple of years, sort of public sex environments, particularly gay public sex environments, are still quite heavily policed. So police are patrolling these areas quite heavily in the hopes of trying to potentially catching people in the act so they can be arrested and charged. And I think actually we need to sort of bring attention to that. I know that Peter Tatchell, who's an LGBT campaigner, has been for many, many years, has raised this case quite recently, I think, with a couple of London boroughs. And actually that, because and I think actually that we need to sort of bring attention to that, the disproportionate policing that we still sometimes see towards homosexuality. But there are still a number of issues moving on, and you've touched upon lots of them. It's that idea of making it easier for basically trans people to self-identify, to be able to, you know, get access to the healthcare they need and the medication they need, you know, to feel much more comfortable with who they are. Being able to use, for another thing, you know, having gender-neutral toilets, I think, is really, really important, because what we know with transphobic hate crime is a lot of conflict and hate crime can occur around toilets, and where trans men or trans women, which toilets they decide to use, there could be a lot of use there. So I think increasing things such as gender-neutral toilets would be a benefit, having it easier for people to, you know, note their gender on their own passports and other documentation and so on and so forth would again also be, you know, would help us make good strides towards a full equality for trans people in particular, where they kind of do lag behind in terms of when we look at the LGBTQ plus umbrella. You know, we've made lots of progress in terms of sort of homosexuality and so on, whereas transphobia perhaps has lagged a little bit behind, and we need to bring that up to the same level as homophobia.
How can anyone listening like find out more, and how can people help?
That's another good question. There's a number of ways that people can help. So there are a number of organisations out there, Stonewall, that do a lot of work, so you can volunteer for charities. There's a charity called Gallup who specialise in supporting victims of LGBT plus violence. You can support them by donating money, by volunteering. There are lots of other sort of small charities out there that run sort of helplines and things for LGBTQ plus people. Again, you could volunteer there. You could raise awareness of these issues, by things on social media and so on. So just by, you know, making people aware of the high rates of hate crime, I think, because I know that when I say to some people, you know, about, you know, the high levels of hate crime, that they are quite taken aback, actually. And it makes them think about, okay, well, what more could I do? So I guess, you know, bringing these issues to the fore, perhaps. You could write to your local MP. There are a number of petitions as well that are active. You can start your own petitions, you know, making sure that we sort of sign our names to these things to ensure that we can sort of get the equality all people should be are deserving of, really.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to speak and to be on this podcast. I'm sure everyone will be very interested in what we've had to say, and I hope they're looking forward to the live lecture as well. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me, and I look forward to giving the lecture.
I want to say a massive thanks to Luke for joining us for that podcast, and I really hope that you found it very, very interesting. Interesting to see how quite often human rights does map onto other issues. You know, people from marginalised communities for very different things actually have a lot of the same issues hurting them. And it's very interesting to look at the term hate crime and really understanding what that means. And that's something you could take away from this. You could look into hate crimes and investigate a little bit more, because what we're saying here is that the crime is not just hitting a victim, the crime is intended to send a message to a community. And that's a different kind of challenge. Some of the other things that you could look at when you go a bit deeper into this is maybe look at the term disproportionate policing. So that is where someone, it doesn't have to be LGBTQ plus when you look at this, but it's where someone is policed a little bit differently with the same rule to someone else. So in this example, it could be that people of same-sex relationships are being held accountable for a rule, whereas people in different sex relationships wouldn't be as policed for this, even though the rule applies to both. But we can see this in a lot of ways. For example, you can see this in race, where you might have a lot more stop and search hurting people from Black community. Another thing that you might want to do is try and map the history of the law and homosexuality, because it's always been a contentious thing, especially in the UK. You can spot that we mentioned a few times within this podcast about different points in time, like the 50s and the 60s, where being gay was made legal. So it used to be illegal. And you can track a little bit about more about how rights then became more viable to people from same-sex relationships along the way. And if you were to be able to maybe write a short essay or create a presentation that was on the mapping of these timelines, you might be able to pull out some really interesting trends, but then you'll also get a lot more developed into the understanding of what rights are being affected and where we need to go and keep this trajectory going. And the last thing I'm going to challenge you with is looking at different areas of human rights. Here we've got something that's almost an invisible issue, in that a lot of people in the LGBTQ plus community have this message of, well, we'll tolerate, but it's not inclusive. And this is because it's all this whole message of, well, you can hide it. You know, it's not our race. It's not a visible disability. This is something that someone technically can hide from someone else. But this highlights a whole new area of issues, because this is not allowing someone to have the same inclusivity and equality within the world and within just life. So think about that, and think about how an unfair expectation is put on a community, and what ways you could do to tackle this. We talked about, you know, making things more mainstream in the media, or maybe raising awareness at a younger age, and just not allowing this ability to hide anymore, and being more inclusive into the UK community is made up of a lot of different people from a lot of different backgrounds, and that's the beauty of it. So hopefully that'll give you something to ponder on and take away. Please keep checking in with us, and we're excited to keep producing these podcasts, and we hope that you're enjoying them.